Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, welcome back to a Wednesday, May 31st, 2023 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, the full ride here on the Chase Thomas Podcast Network. It's Wednesday morning, so you know what that means. It means fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green on the program to talk all things college football. On today's show, we talked about the SEC scheduling format, if it's going to be 8 or 9 games here in 2023. We talk about the CBS on SC or the SEC on CBS games of the week, those 3:30 slots that have already been revealed this week, and who might pick up a couple of those last spots. And just, this is the end of SEC on CBS, and who might be in the booth for those ABC SEC games going into next year and all that good stuff. Big point of the show, though, first timers in the college football playoff in 2023-2024. We talk about Utah, Texas, Texas A&M, Penn State, and Tennessee, and whether any of these schools are likely to break that streak where they have not made the college football playoff since it has been invented here in the sport. Pluses and minuses for each, why it is more likely for some than others, all that and more coming up with Matt on today's edition of the program. As always, folks, if you are already subscribed to this program, first, thank you. But if you have not already and you're a subscriber and you like this very show, hit that pause button and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get your podcasts. Helps other people find the show, and it's the easiest way to help this show continue to grow a little bit more each and every day. It helps. If you are a first-time listener, first, thank you, and hope you guys enjoy the program today, and to make sure that you never miss an episode of this daily national sports show, make sure you hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast player. New content each and every day. College football every Wednesday here on the full ride on the Chase Thomas Podcast Network, CTPN. All that being said, if you have any college football questions for Matt and myself you would like us to answer on next week's show, you can always email us at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at the show at @PodChaseThomas, so give that a follow if you're not already. You can also watch us. Yeah, every episode, full episodes, video, clips, shorts, all that good stuff on our YouTube page. So we near 1,000, so make sure you're subscribed and get us there today. YouTube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast, like and subscribe, all that good stuff. So there you go, all kinds of fun stuff, and it's Wednesday, so it's time for Matt. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast, the Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ. We're mere hours removed from the Tennessee Volunteers getting the crystal ball for 5-star prospect, Mike Matthews. 5-star number one overall player last year, Nico Iamaliava at quarterback. It was only natural that that would start permeating to other skill position playmakers around Nico coming into the fold. So Mike Matthews, you've got J.J. Harrell. You might have Amari Jefferson, who evened up with Georgia and Alabama over the weekend. The 865 Live, big-time weekend following Georgia's big-time recruiting weekend the following week. Sammy Brown coming in, and many are saying past Clemson. The Vols past Clemson, so it might just be down to Tennessee and Georgia for the 5-star linebacker. And that the ball that he said that the Vols set the bar high with that visit here over the weekend. And then, you know, Ryan Wingo still spent a lot of time with this staff. You get Peyton Lewis in the fold, the 4-star running back out of Salem, Virginia. He commits to the Vols this weekend. Williams Wanneri, the 5-star defensive lineman, trending towards Tennessee. It looks like it's down to Tennessee, Oklahoma there. 5-star Daniel, or 4- or 5-star running back Daniel Hill also made it to campus. He's going to be in the final three for South Carolina, Alabama. We've got Braylon Russell, the 4-star running back out of Arkansas, who it's down to Arkansas and Tennessee. So all of this to say, Matt Green, when we say everything school HQ around here, we say, hey, it doesn't mean only that the Tennessee baseball team has made the NCAA tournament again and on their way with the fifth best odds of winning the dang thing in a down year. That's not to say the Lady Vols softball team, who made the College World Series over the weekend, is not the only thing that we're doing. It's not to say that rowing, it's not to say that Tennessee football recruiting, it's not to say that Joe Milton and Ramel Keaton spending time at the NASDAQ in New York City last week is the only thing that Tennessee is doing here on Everything School HQ. What it is meaning to say is that there's always good news popping up here on Rocky Top, and you look away for one moment and bam, another big thing popping up for the Vols. So with all that being said, fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Wow. I don't even know where to begin with all that you said. Speaking of everything school, I don't know if you saw a Saturday Down South post recently about the most regular season titles in all sports the past decade. According to this, Tennessee isn't very much of an anything school. If we're being honest, they're fourth to last. Only six regular season titles. Only Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Missouri are below that. Georgia's at 15, kind of middle of the pack in the SEC. Arkansas with 53, they're leading the way. So, yeah. Tennessee's in recent years, this past decade, going all sports. So I don't know. I was told they were in everything school.
You start from Danny White on, Matt Green, and it's all about the present.
So like a 3 years ago, everything school. That's what we're going with.
Look, everything. The Parkview Tennessee connection is strong. Mike Matthews from the alumni Parkview High School.
Okay, that was my second point here. We're celebrating crystal ball predictions now.
We are.
In this fickle world that is college football recruiting, we're celebrating crystal balls?
I mean, I seem to recall Georgia fans were celebrating the Dylan Raiola crystal ball weeks
leading up to it. I think they were getting excited because all the things were pointing to Dylan Raiola. That was also like a recruitment that was really narrowed down to like a couple teams. Like,
is that not
Mike
how,
Matthews?
It's down to two.
He's wide open. No one knows what this guy's gonna do. He's got his five officials he's taken. Like, this guy, I'm just saying, I don't get a good read on this guy either way. It's definitely encouraging. If I was a Tennessee fan, I would be a fist pump inside. No, maybe by your side, like just a little fist pump. Not going nuts. Not celebrating anything. It's nowhere near done. A commitment feels good right now, but commitment doesn't even like tell you everything. But I mean, crystal ball predictions. I don't know. These guys. If it's Wilt Fong, then Wilt Fong knows his stuff. But anyone other than Rusty or Wilt Fong, I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it.
Wow. Really wanting to rain on my parade this evening.
Not just throwing shade at anyone out there making college football predictions that's listening to this podcast. But hopefully we got some 24/7 people listening to this. But yeah, I don't know. Mike Matthews, it'd be a huge get for Tennessee, but I just don't count your chickens before they hatch, as they say.
If this class winds up, because you already got Nathan Laycock, the four-star, who's just I'm so excited about here in the fold, who's on campus now out of North Carolina, who I think is going to be a star here. If they are able to find a way, because I was just betting on them getting two of, like, basically just splitting Amari and Mike to go along with J.J. Harrell. And if they end up with three, if they end up with Amari Jefferson and Mike Matthews and J.J. Harrell, that's just, you talk about just a cornucopia of skilled player talent right there. That's pretty interesting, and I'm interested to see what happens with the kid who was in over the weekend, who seems like he's been leaning Florida all week or all year. Amir Jackson out of Portal, Georgia, made a good impression there. The four-star tight end that Tennessee pivoted to following Jaden Riddell's commitment to the Dogs. So interesting to see if Tennessee is able to get him in the boat, because they still need more tight end depth. They got Jonathan Echols, the five-star tight end commit. Who's been a commit for about a year now from IMG, but they need another one in the boat because it's a very thin tight end room, and they're going to be without McAllen Castles and Jacob Warren going to next year. So when you talk about thin, there's not a lot left. When I say not a lot, there's nothing left behind Ethan Davis going into next year, the Collins Hill four-star, who I think will be a factor this year. So that concludes the Tennessee Minute here to kick things off. But it was 865 Live. It was following y'all's weekend.
Georgia's not done. Next weekend is Raiola's actual official visit, and that's going to be absolutely loaded weekend for Georgia's class. I know Ryan Wingo and a bunch of committed prospects are going to be there, but I think Wingo is the one that Georgia fans need to focus on now, because to provide an update on Jeremiah Smith and my expert analysis of following recruiting as a fan for however long, this guy was in some workout rocking a Georgia, like, dry fit, whatever, t-shirt thing while in the workout. Boom. That's a red flag if I've ever seen it. Like, he's not going to Georgia. He's loving the attention, but If it's serious, I don't think you rock that gear, like, actually in public. Like, I think you want to be more low-key. Like, I remember, who was it, like, Trey Sanders, I want to say, was like, he rocked, like, a Florida hoodie on signing day, and it's like, that's like the kiss of death. It's like, no, if he's this public showing you love, like, it's probably not going to happen.
That's interesting. Maybe that's true. I always think that was pretty hard anyway, though. Like, when it's leaning, like, I think with wide receivers anyway, you're up against Ohio State. They're going to be the cream of the crop here as long as Brian Hartline is the lead recruiter at Ohio State. I mean, they're going to have two first-round guys again this year. And Abeka? I always forget his name. Emmanuel Abeka? What is his
Abuka.
Name? Abeka. And then, obviously, Marvin Harrison.
Emeka Abeka, I believe.
Yeah. Two super talented dudes who are going probably top 15 once again. The NFL is just going to only have Ohio State wide receivers at some point here. So
for sure. And, I mean, I wouldn't put anything past the way Georgia recruits and everything and getting Raiola and how good the class could be. But it's just like, don't get your hopes up that you're going to get this five-star, like, potentially, like, generational wide receiver talent away from Ohio State. It's just, that's going to be a long shot.
For sure. What else might not be a long shot, though, Matt Green, is the SEC staying at 8 conference games. And we're going to see what happens this week with the SEC meetings. And there's a lot of folks who aren't sure that anything gets done this week, that they still might not come to a full-on agreement because different teams have different motivations, different folks want different things. I don't know what ultimately happens. I think it seems like, reading through the tea leaves and listening to different people talk about it, that it is leaning 8+1, meaning the 8 conference games plus the 1 Power 5 non-conference game still being the requirement. So that preserves, like, Louisville, Kentucky, that preserves Georgia Tech, that preserves Clemson, South Carolina, those kind of things. It doesn't seem like you're going to get either 8-0 or 9-0. It seems like you're either getting 9
plus... What are you saying, 0?
As in no requirement to play a Power 5 non-conference game. Because that's the requirement right now. So that's your way out of it. And I think there's another way around this too, where I think it was Graham Coffee who tweeted about this, where it's like, it doesn't mean that they would have to do the pods or that it would, the schedule would be, or you would lose a lot of permanent rivalries if you went to the eight. What you could do is like, you break it up where you, everyone goes there once every 4 years, and you kind of, you still have your three permanent rivals, and there's a way to still rotate enough, but it would just be, you don't get to go every other year. It would be once every, basically, if you're there as a freshman to your senior year, there's a way to do it that way. But yeah, I think it seems like it's going to come down to the, to ESPN having to throw out more money, right? Like, it seems like if ESPN's not going to give more money to the SEC to play an extra conference game, conference teams are like, we want to go bowling and we don't want to be 2-10 and have to play like 9 conference games plus a Power 5 non-conference game. Like, if you're Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Mizzou, I mean, insert perennial.
Hey, leave Mizzou out of this, though, because according to reports, they're actually one of the teams that would actually wants 9 games. I think it was like Georgia, Florida, LSU, and then even in the article, just throwing strays at Missouri. It was like, and surprisingly enough, Missouri.
I know Tennessee doesn't want it, apparently.
Because Missouri's been one of those that, like, because they don't have that locked rival like a lot of, like a South Carolina or Florida has. It seems like they've loaded up on cupcakes most years at a conference. So, hey, they're trying to play 9 conference games. They're like, hey, let's do it. But I hope if they keep it at 8, that maybe they make a 2 Power 5 requirement or something. Because so many teams do have that one that's like, and you see what certain teams like Alabama and Georgia, and I'm not 100% sure about Tennessee's future schedule, but like some teams are playing some, just voluntarily playing some big time out of conference games. So it would be nice to, like, obviously you still got 2 games to work with and maybe get your paycheck game to a G5 school. But I don't know. If it means we can see more Power 5 matchups, like, then I'm all for it. The one thing I have the issue with, like, the current format, like the East and West, that's obviously not an option, right? I don't think they can still continue to do that, because then you're going 7 divisional games and 1 versus the West. Then we're in the same scheduling like rut that we are now, where it takes 15 years to play everyone home and home. Like, it's kind of ridiculous. So you would have to move that game, so that would, you would lose Auburn, Georgia, and you would lose Alabama, Tennessee like that. So I think what they were going to do was the 3-6 if they go to 9 games. So I assume they're just going to go 3-5 at an 8-game schedule. And I just worry with 8 games and the 3-5, if you actually end up, if the tiebreaker for the SEC championship becomes like more of an ordeal. Like last year you saw Washington, you know, didn't even play USC, I think, and USC somehow got the tiebreaker for them and went to the conference championship. Like, you're going to have more instances like that, I think, with an 8-game schedule versus a 9-game schedule, just the probability of just playing that team potentially. But so that's the one thing I worry about. But I was definitely disappointed when I first heard that they're leaning to 8 games over 9.
I mean, if they go 8, I wonder, is Georgia Auburn out every year?
I mean, no, see, I think if you're going with the 3 locked rivals, like, Georgia Auburn still stays. I mean, that's literally, it's the Deep South's oldest rivalry, right? It's the longest running rivalry in the whole SEC. So I think that's definitely still in. I think Georgia Florida's still in, you know, but Georgia Tennessee, that's definitely going to be a game you lose every year. And it's like, while like NCAA football, like, didn't consider that an official rivalry game, you know, like back in the day, if you're playing the game, Tennessee Georgia is 100% a rivalry. Like, we obviously know that the two states touch each other and the history goes way back. So that'd be a weird one not to get every year, but you're not going to get through everyone home and home in 4 years, but I think you would get it by 5, because you had to do the 3-6 model to actually play everyone home and home twice in a 4-year, or everyone home and home in a 4-year period. This, I guess, with 3-5, it'd just be like a 4.5-year kind of rotation, and it'd make it a little, you know, it wouldn't be as clean as the 3-6. Just kind of you know who your opponents are, and even in odd years, but they'll make it work, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. My main thing is just preserve the 3. I don't really care if you do 8 or 9. Just preserve 3 permanent rivals, and I'm good.
Yeah, you got to preserve the 3 because the divisions at this point, it's just everyone's done with the divisions. It's like college football is built on the rival, on like the traditional rivals. So it's like those certain games you just can't not have. And I wonder if, you know, if we had 2 more years of what the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry had been for the last decade, like, I wonder if we'd all feel like that's one where, like, oh, we're not losing Tennessee-Alabama, you know? But I feel like after last year, like, on a national scale, people are like, oh, this Tennessee-Alabama thing is awesome. It's like people forgot about it because it's just been so long since Tennessee was on that level.
I mean, you had Legion Field is where it, like, used to be played at. And, I mean, it was – I would argue if you talk to any local Tennessee fan or anybody else, it's like – it's not even close. Like, Alabama, Tennessee is the one you preserve at all costs. Like, it over anybody else, any rivalry. And you know what? It's funny, too. Tennessee used to play Auburn every year. Like, that's just forgotten. Like, Tennessee and Auburn used to play every year, and that was just a normal thing. And they didn't have, like, a name, the rivalry type name, but that was something you did, and you just got used to it. Like, it just stopped, and that was it. But getting that back into the fold, because I couldn't even tell you the last time Auburn's been in Neyland. Like, it's been a long, long time. So, I would say Alabama Tennessee isn't going anywhere, and like you said, the best version of Alabama Tennessee is, I mean, the highest rated college football game in the SEC last year. So yeah, that's one worth preserving, because fans on both sides still very much hate one another. And I mean, Josh Pate, I think, tweeted like the other day this that I think the original tweet was like, what was the loudest college football venue you've ever been in, you've ever been in person? And he said Tennessee, Alabama last year was the loudest football atmosphere he's ever been in, college football wise. So I think just seeing that and what that looked like, especially at the end and how the game went. I mean, when both teams are up, that is a really, really, really important college football game. It's just good. Like, those are just the gimmies. Like, don't overthink this, college football leaders. Don't overthink this, SEC administrators. Like, you know the ones that you need to keep. You know the ones that you need to preserve. Don't make this overly complicated. Like, just don't do it. And then there's the other school of thought, which is with what's going on with the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12, it's like, we can make these decisions, but like, will it matter in a couple of years if the ACC schools find a way out of this grant of rights and Florida State, North Carolina, or SEC teams in 3 years? Like, just because they're making these rules now and they're doing the schedule format, like, as we've seen, you can do whatever you want with these schedules. Like, you can kick teams out, put teams in. Like, there are rumors that, like, how much longer are we going to do the buy-in games? Like,
I mean, we had a pandemic and then rescheduled the whole SEC schedule, like, in a couple months. Like,
yeah, if it's a disaster,
they act like it's complicated, but
it's really not. And if it's a disaster and fans don't like it and coaches, and they'll be like, all right, we'll go vote again at the spring meetings in Destin and we'll hash it out all over again. I'm not sweating it. I think it will still be fine. I think I'll still very much enjoy the college football season, and we'll figure it out.
The year's 2035, and we have the two major conferences of the SEC and the Big Ten, and that's all of college football. And then people are like, you know, maybe we should kind of divide these up more. And the ones on the West Coast are all in their one conference. Mm-hmm. And then maybe that Midwest, like Texas area, they're kind of all in the one conference. And then Atlantic Coast, that's kind of its own area. And then, I don't know, they'll create giant divisions of those conferences. And it's like, I don't know, we'll be back to where we are. But
I do think that's what ends up happening when they get to these super conferences. I think we have the divisions, and it'll just be like the Pac-12 division in the Big Ten is what will end up happening.
And it'll just be like, I guess, the NFL, and you're like, I don't know how you're doing the divisions, but the Eagles need to play the Cowboys every year and the Giants. Mm. Because it's like the NFL divisions aren't even really that old for what they are.
The Falcons currently used to be in the NFC West.
Yeah. The 49ers-Falcons was like a rivalry, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It was weird. It doesn't matter. It's just sports. It's all very silly. Did you have any thoughts on the SEC on CBS schedule that's already been released here, Matt Green? Did I see Georgia, South Carolina already put on there?
Yes, got the nod over Tennessee, Florida. I don't
know. Does
that
mean it's a night game?
No, it's a 3:30.
No, I'm saying Tennessee, Florida.
Probably will be. Yeah,
I couldn't tell you the last time Tennessee, Florida was a night game at Tennessee, or either, really. I don't even know when it would have been.
Yeah, it seems like that's been kind of the that first SEC CBS game of most years, Tennessee, Florida. But obviously,
thanks a lot, Florida. You got us demoted to Jefferson Pilot at noon.
But I think also what this is people have seen Georgia's schedule and they're like, this is South Carolina week three. They're going to be like 2-0. Georgia, this is going to be one of the...
I don't think South Carolina... I mean, they're not even favored in week one.
No, that's true. They got North Carolina early on. But yeah, so it's like probably an opportunity to like guarantee Georgia for like a big time atmosphere home game that early in the season where South Carolina's season isn't over yet. This isn't just an automatic win. Like it most likely will, not to disrespect South Carolina, but Georgia's been putting it on them the last couple times they've played. But yeah, and then obviously later in the year you had Georgia, Florida. They've already put on the schedule, and then just Missouri and Arkansas for that Black Friday game, which is solid little border rivalry that I've become a fan of in recent years. But the one thing, it's October 14th, we got a doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
So have you seen the schedule for October 14th?
I have not.
So we got this is when they got like the noon and then the 3:30 game. We got Arkansas at Alabama, A&M at Tennessee, Auburn at LSU, Florida at South Carolina. Who do you think they go with the doubleheader there? Who's the primetime game there?
Say it again.
I would say either A&M Tennessee or Arkansas at Alabama.
I think
or Auburn at LSU.
I think Auburn LSU gets 3:30. And then I think Tennessee LSU gets the second game, or Tennessee
so
A&M. Excuse
the,
me.
That's I think the noon 3:30 doubleheader.
Or
so.
Noon. That's what I meant. Yeah, I think it's noon is Auburn LSU and 3:30 is Tennessee A&M.
Tennessee. I think A&M Tennessee is just one of those games you don't get a lot. And I think
it's huge fan bases.
I think the Aggies could surprise some people this year too. So I think you could see both teams looking good coming into that game. Then the last doubleheader were at the actual night game, November 4th, 3:30 and 7:45. On that day, I believe you have Alabama or LSU at Alabama, and then I don't know, maybe A&M, Ole Miss, maybe Arkansas, Florida. I don't know if that's going to be interesting at all.
Hmm.
But yeah, then Tennessee, UConn. I don't think that's going to be the one. But yeah, we'll see. Missouri at Georgia, probably not. But yeah, so LSU at Alabama, probably the night game, and it's typical traditional slot that it's gotten over the years.
Yeah,
one last ride for that night game on CBS for Alabama LSU.
For sure, and it will be another fun one for sure. There, I wouldn't say one last ride. I think they'll be a permanent rival potentially. I think
I'm saying on CBS.
Oh, on
like
CBS,
this is the last one. Yeah.
That's going to be weird, man. It is going to be an adjustment making that. Do we know who the favorites are to call the 3:30 ABC games for the SEC?
Do we know that they're going to keep doing a 3:30? Like, are
they not?
I would
assume, right?
I would hope so, because I love that 3:30 slot. I mean,
again, you would just, like, you're just, why are you making it more complicated for the fans? They know, like, everyone in the Southeast knows it's almost 3:30. I need to move my dial to CBS.
I would say, I mean, if it's the 3:30, if you're keeping that as the best one, then it's got to be Fowler and Herb Street, right? Calling the 3:30 CBS.
I guess they move up.
They're getting old too. They're like, hey man, we get that 3:30, get the day done, get the day work day done by 8:00, get home. Don't have to be there overnight. But that's true. I would think if that's still your prime time, but it's like, now that they have access to all of the SEC catalog, then who knows what they're going to do? Who knows if the 7 o'clock one becomes the, because it's the 7 o'clock ESPN game always seemed like that second best game of the week, but that was always still a really good game. So, I mean, I would say, who is it? McDonough and Blackledge, but I think, I want to say Blackledge like signed with someone else, like NBC or something like that.
That sounds right. Yeah.
But, I feel like they were probably always my favorite, pairing, and then you got who, Tessitore, who would be Tessitore. Wait,
you didn't love Blackledge and Patrick on ESPN late? Auburn, Mississippi State, and Blackledge.
You're talking Mike Patrick?
Yeah.
Like, and back in the, no. McDonough's way better than Mike Patrick.
I don't know. It was when they were walking through, what was Blackledge's, where he would go to the town? What do they call it? Where he's like,
yeah, the taste of the town.
Yeah, and he'd go and they'd cut away.
That man would eat some food. I think they had, I think they had to get him off that diet.
Yeah, well, it was I just the nostalgia of our youth, man. That,
but who's a Tessitore? Is he usually with like McElroy?
That sounds right. Yes.
So that they're up there as far as the
they could get that 3:30 slot. That wouldn't surprise me actually.
Yeah, I would bet on Fowler and Herbstreit because that's the spot you want. Like that's 3:30 CBS. That's, I can't even say it. 3:30 ESPN.
I don't think Herbie's going to do only SEC. That doesn't strike me. I think they're going to stay the 7:30 and get the primetime favorite one. I think they probably want the variety. I don't think Fowler.
But how often is that game going to now be an SEC game?
That's true.
Primetime ABC. So I guess that's true. So I don't know. It's tough to say. CBS has just owned that slot for so long. You know, yeah. Maybe ESPN. Disney, maybe they want it.
Maybe. God, it's gonna take getting used to flip through and see Maryland, Michigan State at 3:30 on a CBS Saturday. It's gonna take some time. It's gonna be weird.
I'm just probably gonna watch CBS significantly less than I once did in my college football rotation.
Our big show topic here, Matt Green. I thought this could be a fun exercise. The next team to make their first college football playoff performance or appearance, excuse me, in the 2023-2024 college football season. I have one wild card for this, and then I have a handful. I got five teams here that I thought we could parse through, and I thought it was pretty fascinating to go through who's made it and who haven't. There's more teams that have made the CFP than I thought actually had to this point. Going through the list, you just kind of forget they actually did make it, and you go back through and you're like, I guess that, yeah, they could say they made the playoff years ago. But
you're talking about Washington, aren't you?
I mean Washington, for whatever reason, is ingrained in my head, but like, it just with the Jake Browning struggles against Bama, but I mean, that one's in there. But I mean, you just forget about Oregon because it feels like it was so early on in the process that you just are like, I guess they did, that's right. But Matt Green, my five here with the wild card.
So are these in order?
No, these are not in order.
Are you going to put them in order? Give me a number one. Give me your number one.
Number one, most likely in 2023-2024 to make the college ball playoff for the first time for the university. Among these teams, Utah, Texas, Texas A&M, Penn State, and Tennessee. Of that list, I hate doing this, but my mind can't quit it, where I think of this list, and we'll get into why and why not they won't do it this year and break
is
that.
Is this list finalized? Because I think you got a big omission on this list.
Well, you can throw the omission in there, potentially.
The USC Trojans, I think you got to put on this list.
Well, see, that's interesting, because I don't think they are going to make the CFP, and I would say that they have a pretty slim chance of making the college football playoff this year. They didn't make the cut for me. I think they might be the third or fourth best Pac-12 team altogether. Defense that's is just bold. Not good enough. I don't trust them. Oregon's more complete. Washington's more complete. Utah's more complete. I'm just not there. And what's ingrained in my skull, Matt Green, is Utah just bouncing off these USC defenders. Like, Bear Alexander is not going to be the difference between Alex Grinch having a top 20 voracious Trojan defense in 2023. Caleb Williams is awesome, best quarterback in the sport, but I don't think it's going to be enough for USC to actually break through. So I actually didn't have them as a realistic CFP playoff choice here. I think Utah has a much better opportunity with Cam Rising coming back and company here. And we'll get into why certain teams, I think, are more likely to break that streak. But
with that list,
you asked me the question of with that list, who I think, and I think it's Texas. Last year in the Big 12, TCU is not going to have the season they just had all over again. It's pretty open when you look at the Big 12 right now. If Quinn Ewers is as good as advertised, he's had a full year in the system, best receiving core in the conference, defense looked like they made significant progress last year. Like, I think Texas is the answer. Like, before you have to do the SEC gauntlet, if you want to make the CFP, it's a good year to do it, Texas. So I think of this group, Texas strikes me as the most likely.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like the SEC team, it's like the probability of that new team getting through the SEC is not high, but it's like if they do, they're guaranteed a spot in the playoff. Like LSU has their year where they run the table and they're in the playoff. Like so I think I'm glad you brought this up because I feel like there's this like notion that the playoff, like just the rich got richer during the playoff era and like, you know, oh, all this, it's the same four teams every year type of thing. Mm. And like the last, like we've had like several playoffs in a row where there's a new team in it. Like we had Michigan and Cincinnati in 21. We had TCU in 2022. Like LSU made their run. Like Notre Dame got in there a couple times. Like, I mean, even Georgia and Clemson, like they were not powerhouses before the playoffs started. And so they, two teams that hadn't won in like 30 something years when, by the time they broke their drought. So there can still be some new blood in the playoff next year. I personally think the most likely to do it next year, to me, Utah just feels like a 10-2 team. Like they're good years. They're like a 2-loss team. They're just really good. They're really solid, but like there just always seems to be something missing. I feel like Penn State might be the most likely here because Ohio State's always going to be good, right? Got my tongue there. Ohio State's always going to be good, but they don't feel like they're invincible coming into 2023. Like Michigan is good, but even Michigan style, like they don't feel like dominant. Like, I mean, they dominated some teams last year. Don't get me wrong. They scored a lot of points, but JJ McCarthy's like, he's not that like superstar quarterback. So it's like Michigan feels like they have a super high floor, but like maybe not a ceiling of a national championship. It might be, but there seems to be something like that. There might be something like a weakness to Michigan. You know what I mean? Like Penn State, this feels like they've had some good teams a couple years in a row that basically beat most of the good teams they played and just lost to those best teams they played. But I really like what Penn State's putting together, and if I'm having to put like a team that's going to make their first chance, like over who else you had, like Texas A&M or Tennessee, like Tennessee is up here on the list for sure. I don't feel like they're there in 2023, but like even like a Florida or something is probably like fairly high on like the list of teams that can be a first time playoff contender. You know, I don't think they're going to do it. But A&M, it's like they might make a bowl game, you know? They could go to the playoff, but they could just miss it completely. So I kinda like Penn State. I like your Texas pick too. I think this might be their last chance to have a good, easy road to the playoff.
Yeah. I mean Penn State, 60% blue chip ratio, top 10 right there. Texas at 64%. At 8, the only team, Florida, at the highest there of any team, and we didn't add Florida. They're at 80%. So with who they just brought in, so a lot of talent there that they're bringing in year over year, and you can see it. Like they have the talent if they can figure it all out to make it in, if they can get certain big positions right. So let's break them down one at a time here. Matt Green, Utah. We mentioned him a little bit. I have some notes here. Jaquindon Jackson, who started out as a quarterback at Utah, he's now the new lead tailback. They obviously kicked the crap out of USC twice last year. Physical, bet on Kyle Whittingham, the most underrated football coach, I would maybe argue, in the country. Like, the man just wins year over year. He just put together another great class. I don't know how Utah's still recruiting well in this current NIL climate and everything else going on, but they just win football games. Like, you just keep doubting them. You keep going against Utah, and they're not sexy. They're not fun. But I think it's huge that they got Cam Rising back. Like, he was a player. He was a gamer. They went into the swamp, beat Florida last year. They get him at home this year. You get UCLA at home. You get you had to go to USC.
No, they lost to Florida last year.
Or remember? Excuse me, they lost to Florida. Yeah, so you lost to Florida, but it was on the road at the swamp. You should have won that game. Like, ultimately, like, going back through the fumble at the end on the one, whatever it was.
I think they got the pick in the end zone.
Pick in the end zone. That's what it was. Yeah. It was right there. Like, you just, it was dumb. It was a dumb way to lose. And then you go to USC.
It was a winnable game, but for the Florida fans out there, they won that game for sure.
Sure. And that's fine. Whatever. You get him at home this year to kick things off. So you can set the statement early, like, no, we're not messing around this year. We're not going to dig ourselves a hole. Then you have at USC in October, but you get Oregon at home. That's a big one. You get Oregon at home. You got to go to Washington, but you get Oregon at home, UCLA at home, Florida at home, USC on the road. Like, who cares? Like, you've kicked the crap. You're not worried about going into Los Angeles to beat them there. At Washington's the game I have circled. November 11th. If they can get through that game, or at least get through the Pac-12 or the regular season 11-1, and then just take their chances against one of the other best teams in the Pac-12 come the title game, I think the path is pretty clear. I think it's pretty reasonable to say you could see a scenario where things work out for the Utes and they finally break through and make the playoff. I mean, it's just, you kept Andy Ludwig. He was also, who's just been a great OC for Utah for years. Like, we thought he was going to end up in Notre Dame. Notre Dame thought he was going to end up at Notre Dame. He did not end up at Notre Dame. So you have that continuity. Replacing Dalton Kincaid in their other starting tight end is going to be tough. But it goes back to this trust of development. And I think they're going to have a top 10 quarterback again in the sport. Older quarterbacks winning this thing. And I think their defense is going to be elite all over again in the schedule. I like how it plays out for them. I think I'm not betting on it. I wouldn't bet the mortgage on Utah making the playoff, but I think they're on my list here because I could see a pretty reasonable case for Utah getting over the hump. Do you agree?
Yeah, I want to say I picked Utah to make the playoff last year in our preseason predictions. I just look at the schedule and there just feels like there's a lot of landmines on the schedule. I just feel like Florida, even at Baylor, like week two, like that's not a game that typically, you know, you go on the road at a Power 5 venue, it's like anything can happen in those type of games. Like, and they just, we've talked about how strong the Pac-12 is this year, and Utah basically plays everybody. Like, they got UCLA, Oregon State, USC, Oregon, Washington. Like, they got all the contenders are on their schedule, and then, like, who knows? Season finale with Colorado? Like, that team's, they got a whole season under Deion, you know, maybe they've kind of matured, come together. It's like, they're probably going to be playing for their season and trying to get to a bowl game, that sort of thing, and looking for their marquee win. I don't know. I think Utah, I don't think they get through that schedule with less than two losses. So that's why I don't see them as a playoff team this year. But hey, I wouldn't be the first one that's, counted Kyle Whittingham and the Utes out. So they're used to not having any of the preseason predictions.
I agree. They're better under the radar. They're a team better suited to fly under the radar. So we'll see what happens.
But Gators, I am not counting that as a win week one. Like, I don't know what Florida's going to be, but that was a great game last year. And so we'll see what happens.
Utah better win the Urban Bowl this year. You can't go 0-2 against this Billy Napier crew. And if it's Graham Mertz and company, you can't let them
come in. You got to think Billy Napier is a better coach right now than he was game one of his Florida tenure last year with a brand new roster. They obviously had Anthony Richardson, but we've talked about it. Like, Anthony Richardson wasn't really that good at Florida. So he was obviously that the Utah game was one of his best games, but I mean, he is a lot of good and a lot of bad. So if you got a more consistent, a Graham Mertz, if he is that just more steady hand, no highs, no lows, then, you know, maybe Florida's got a good run game. You know, they might have something. You know, I'm a year two believer in head coaches. So I don't know. I don't think that's going to be – it's going to be Thursday night in Salt Lake City. It's going to be rowdy. But I don't know. The Gators have been in some rowdy environments before.
There you go. Matt Green, Texas. Do you think they are the team that makes their first college ball playoff appearance in 2023-2024? I kind of outlined what I thought, but you go first before I jump back in here on the horns getting through.
I guess I kind of spoiled what I was going to say already, but I don't think – I mean, I think they're definitely a contender. If I got to pick a second team on this list, Texas is definitely it. They just – like you said, the wide receivers with Quinn Ewers, like – it's kind of it's a huge year for Sarkisian. Like the pressure is definitely there on Texas to have their breakthrough year. Like it's kind of crazy that the pressure is what it is when you have at Alabama on the schedule. It's like that's like a guarantee L for the last decade and a half, basically. So but with what Alabama looks like right now and what Texas looks like right now, like that's going to be like a touchdown line or something, like a less than a touchdown line. Like it's going to be a really close one. So Texas does look really good on paper, but it's like, don't we always think Texas looks good on paper? So it's hard to know exactly what you're going to get.
And I feel so dumb just being like, well, listen, this time it's different, because that's the thing when you ever make the case for Texas is you always just, it's the boy who cried wolf at this point where I'm like, look, 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 this year it's different. Like this is the, and it's silly because like we've actually seen it multiple times in our lifetime, Matt Green, like the Colt, like they were there, like Colt McCoy got hurt and Garrett Gilbert had to step in and the Bama Texas title game didn't go well. But they made the national title.
But Vince Young, were a different program back in the Vince Young, Colt McCoy days. Like,
but
they
what
were
I'm saying is
there
were, they still
have
the talent. They still recruit the same way. They still are bringing in top 10 class after top 10 class. They have the dudes. Steve Sarkisian, we've seen success at USC, at Washington, at Alabama, even with the Falcons. Quinn Ewers is the forgotten just like superstar recruit who kind of fell off the radar because he did the Ohio State thing for a little bit. And then last year, who was playing really well, as we talked about in that Alabama-Texas recap from months ago, Matt Green, was just that, like, what does that game look like in the end if Quinn Ewers doesn't get hurt? Because he was dealing. And what happens when he doesn't have a Bijan Robinson or a, what is it, Roschon Johnson? Was that the backup? Yeah. Losing both backs where people might be a little worried. What if it goes the other way, where they have to pass more, where Quinn has to do more stuff with his arm because he doesn't have the superstar otherworld tailback in Bijan behind him? That he's going to have to find Xavier Worthy. He's going to have to find A.D. Mitchell. He's going to have to find all these dudes. And I think that's a positive. I think you can make the case Texas has the best trio of wideouts heading into the 2023 season. I think that's fair. And look, the defense was great last year. I think you could make the case Quinn Ewers has the talent to have a Heisman-type year for Texas. That obviously helps their chances significantly. They have the talent. They're in the blue-chip ratio. They have to beat Bama on the road this time. They blew it at home last year. So now you got to go into Tuscaloosa and win that game. It's going to be very different. It's obviously going to be a big game. For I'm sure College Game Day will be there for Bama-Texas. Like it's just going to be... it's going to be tough, regardless of what we think about Alabama at this point. Like, Bama should be favored, and it's going to be big. Oklahoma's always Oklahoma, Texas. But they were 24th in scoring last year. If you want to make the playoff, guess what? You got to be top 10. Like, that's just the name of the game. You've got to be better. You were good. You got to be elite offensively this year. That has to happen under Steve Sarkisian. You're an offensive genius. You got to do it.
There's also this idea that Quinn Ewers got hurt versus Alabama and then was out for the season or something. Like he missed like a couple games, and then he got a lot of mediocre games from Quinn Ewers, if we're being honest. Like, say with the offensive line or whatever the case may be, or the inconsistent receiver play or whatever it was. He had a lot of dud games, and he had some good, he had some bad. So you also need to see Quinn Ewers be more consistent.
I mean, I agree. But I also think it's possible. Like, he has the talent to be more consistent. I think that defense has the pieces to be a top 20 defense in scoring. If they're top 10 in offense, top 20, top 20, 30 in defense, that screams 11-1 type year for them. And they can be there. This schedule is not that terrifying. Like, you look at this, the biggest landmine is obviously at Alabama, but you beat Oklahoma. You get Kansas State at home. Like, you get Texas Tech at home to end the year. You got to go to Baylor, but I think Baylor will be down a little bit. You get Kansas at home this time. Like, it's really just TCU is the only other red flag here on the road, because TCU's kind of owned Texas the last couple of years. So that's probably one I have circled too, to see if they can break through. But I like the schedule. I think worst case scenario, it's 10-2 for the Horns. And you, if you're a Texas fan, you should expect 11-1 and a really breakthrough college football playoff knocking at the door type year from them. I think that's fair. The pressure is going to be on for Sark and company in Austin, because I think there is enough talent on this roster that they should be making strides and be a playoff team this year. I think that's fair.
And I think the TCU thing last year, like, that, you cannot ignore the TCU factor and what that does to the degrees of Steve Sarkisian's seat. You know, It's like, the second they made the college football playoff, Steve Sarkisian's seat got a little bit warmer. It's like, this dude's in year one. We're fucking Texas, like, and we're in year three now. That was last year's year two of Sarkisian, right? So he's going into year three. If they don't actually, if they're not at least in the Big 12 championship and a chance to go to the playoff, I think there's a lot of people that are wondering, like, if he is that guy, if he's the guy, right guy for the job. Like, he still has a lot to prove for this fan base.
I agree. Texas A&M staying in state here, because these two teams got lapped or got passed by TCU to become the first Texas school to make the college football playoff, just as we all predicted when the college football playoff came about, that the Frogs would end up making it first. But Matt Green, you kind of alluded
right,
to
Baylor. Baylor should have made the very first one too, and none of them got in there before TCU.
No, it was the Hypnotoads. They made it through. A&M though, by Petrino, enters the fold here. Jim Chaney, I think, is like an offensive analyst at A&M now. You've got DJ Durkin calling the defense. You've got talent everywhere, Matt Green. They lost some stuff to the portal, but guess what? I was going through it. A&M, there's a lot of reason for optimism here. Like, I think, look, A&M fans, I know you've heard this before, but like, there is a lot of reasons for optimism. I know you are a pretty big fan of the Bobby Petrino offensive coordinator hire, Matt Green. Here's the thing. When you look at this and how their season went last year, obviously 5-7, missed the bowl game, unacceptable to A&M. They've got talent in the right spots. They are loaded on the trenches, in the trenches, with talent. Like, you look at it, five-star, and productive dudes on both sides of the ball there. That's going to be huge come SEC time, where I'm like, this is a good starting point. And then you get Bama at home again. We know what happened the last time they got Bama at home in College Station. They got a win. So that's nice. You got to go to Tennessee, which we talked about. That's going to be maybe, I would say that's probably their biggest game of the year. Like, that's going to be a big test, because you want to be able to see that you can win in a shootout against a now juggernaut in Neyland. Obviously, it's just going to be a crazy, crazy environment for A&M and Tech and Tennessee. So we'll see what that looks like for them. But that's a big one for the Aggies. I think 10-2 with some help puts them in the CFP conversation. Like, I don't know if it gets them in, but like, we forget Matt Green. A couple years ago, they were knocking on the door in the COVID year of making the college football playoff. They have flirted with it in the Jimbo era. It's not like it's been 5-7, just not working out. We've seen the best, and the best is close to a college football playoff team. And part of that is because their defense is usually pretty good, borderline elite under this era. And that's why it's so frustrating, is that like, it's a Jimbo, it's everything's about Jimbo. But it's like, the defense has kept this thing even afloat because of how tough the offense is. So if Bobby Petrino gives any kind of jolt, then you're suddenly really cooking with grease because of the players they already have in this system. Like, Connor Wegman, five-star kid, could be a star. We'll see. But like, in the five games the Aggies won last year, Matt Green, they held opponents to 11 points per game. Like, that's top 10 in the country. I was just going through different things. And it's like, when they win, they smother you. And the defense is one of the best you'll see. They were the number one pass defense in the SEC last year. That's probably, I don't know if they'll be number one again, but you want to be the number one pass defense in the SEC if you want to win football games. So they have talent all across the board. They're coached well. Like, you could see it. Like, you could see A&M breaking through with another elite year from their defense in combination with their wideouts. Love their wideouts as well. Connor Wegman takes a step forward. The offensive line should be fine. The defensive line should be fine. I think the secondary will be elite once again. You're like, there is enough elements here that I think them breaking through and making the college football playoff, or at least being in the conversation come late November, is a distinct possibility. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think when you were talking about Texas having the best wide receiver, trio of wide receivers in the country, like A&M was probably the first team I thought of that they might have a better trio than Texas does. Like, they have playmakers, and Wegman, he looked, once he took over, the offense did look more competent. It's hard to say it ever looked good. They scored 30 points twice the whole season. So it was never really good, but at least had a pulse, and they had the big win over LSU. I think we know how they've recruited. And yeah, like you said, I've been vocal on here before, the Bobby Petrino, Jimbo stuff, it's starting to feel like some of the Brian Kelly stuff we heard last year of like, oh, it's ha-ha, look at this, look how he talks, look at the dancing, whatever. And it's like you forget that Brian Kelly was a damn good football coach at multiple destinations, just a very good coach by all accounts. And Bobby Petrino is one of the best offensive minds in college football the last decade plus, two decades that we've seen. So if that's clearly been A&M's biggest weakness, has been the offensive side of the ball. You saw what a Todd Monken could come in and do with what Georgia was on offense in 2019 and 2020. Well, 2020 was Monken, but still in the whole COVID and the Stetson Bennett and everything, Dwan Mathis kerfuffle. But you saw what the steps that Georgia's offense took under the right offensive coordinator. So I think A&M could see a similar boost. And the biggest thing is a vulnerable Alabama in the SEC West. Like, because it doesn't feel like the most juggernaut of juggernaut Alabama teams coming into 2023, and you have them at home. It's like, sometimes you need to be, more lucky than good, and things, just kind of work out in your favor. Like, every time LSU has made the playoff for the national championship, the game seems to be in the Superdome. I'm not sure how that works, but it happens every time. It's like, sometimes things just align for you. So A&M, this could be the year. Like, LSU, I would probably say, is going to be the preseason favorite in the West, but it's going to be close with them in Alabama. So this is kind of it's probably more, I'd have to look at the history of the voting, but I would say more of a mixed bag on like who the media is going to pick to win the SEC West next year. And that definitely works in their favor.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you make the case that it's a four-team race, right? Like, I would say LSU, Arkansas, Bama, and A&M. Like, you could make the case.
I mean, it's hard to even put Arkansas in there. I would say Alabama, LSU, and A&M for sure. Obviously, A&M was at the bottom there, or last year, but Arkansas is obviously going to, think they can, and Auburn is Auburn. Like, never gonna discount Auburn. Like, who knows what they're capable of? Gus Malzahn, year one, they played for a national title. So,
that's true.
Who knows with Auburn?
That's true. So we'll see. We'll see.
We didn't even put Auburn on this list of potential playoff teams. Like, they're definitely right there where like a Florida is.
Well, no, this is the first appearance ever. They've made the playoff.
No, Auburn's never made the playoff.
Yes, they did.
No, 2013, that was the last BCS.
The Dick Marshall year wasn't the playoff?
No, that was BCS. Florida State.
That's right.
Yeah, that was the last
one. I guess Auburn hasn't.
No, so they're definitely a candidate, just like Florida is. And
oh, I forgot. I forgot about Auburn. Okay, well, there you go. Auburn is another one on this list, but I don't think they're a candidate in 2023. I don't think Peyton Thorne is getting them there.
I wouldn't think so.
Penn State here, and our final two here, Matt Green. Penn State, you have a lot to say about the Nittany Lions. Go ahead here. I'll let you lead this because I feel like I might lead the Tennessee one.
I think Penn State, like James Franklin, he's definitely one of those, like, kind of polarizing coaches, I feel like, at this point, because there's a lot of, what does he want? And then a lot of people are like, oh, for what he's doing at Penn State, he's one of the best coaches out there. But that does only take you so far, because Penn State is, it's not This isn't Vanderbilt. Like, winning 9 games at Vanderbilt, like, build the man a statue. Like, that's just that's absurd. I think he did it twice. Mm-hmm. But at Penn State, they do have the resources. They might not be what you want to call a blue blood or whatever. And, you know, the athletes aren't coming out of the Midwest and the Northeast like, you know, they once were in Big Ten country. But Penn State is still a powerhouse program, and they had the good 2016 where, you know, they had a case for being in the playoff, but that's the only time they've really even sniffed it. Like last year felt like such a Mark Richt Georgia season for Penn State. It was just like 10-2, lost to the two best teams you played. You look around, you're like, look, we're like number 7 or number 8. We're a really good team. Just having to convince everybody that you're a really good team. But it's like, you got to show me. Like, whenever it's the big game, like, you don't really, you know, we believe in the big game atmosphere with Penn State, but, you know, it's more times than not, they haven't gotten it done. So I think with Michigan, you know, being what they are, like, they were a great team last year, but I don't feel like they were necessarily as dominant as some of, as like the feeling that they have right now. You know what I mean? Like, they feel like they blew out Ohio State last year. And final score, they did, but like that game was a back and forth game halfway through the fourth quarter, right? Like the score went lopsided. But I don't think Michigan is just some insurmountable force in the Big Ten East. Obviously, just playing in the Big Ten East in general, maybe Wisconsin or someone's got a better chance of getting in the playoff than someone like Penn State. But I do think the level of players Penn State's been getting in recent years, like, they're upping their recruiting. Like, they got great running backs. And I think Drew Allard, like, he showed some signs last year. He showed, like, he looks like he's got a higher ceiling than, who am I blanking on?
Sean Clifford.
So I don't know. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, if Allard can kind of take them to the next level. And I might be pronouncing his name wrong. I don't know if it's Allard.
It's going to be one of those we have to just listen to the broadcast, because I swear, even when I listen to other college football podcasts, it's like I've heard Aller and Aller, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm going to say Aller until otherwise. But look, Drew Aller, I think the ceiling's higher. You knew what you were getting in Clifford, and there is some comfort in that, because the dude did win a bunch of games in Happy Valley for the Nittany Lions. The dude was a gamer, played
hard.
Funny
enough, maybe he was their Aaron Murray, and it was Mark Richt season. It was like, it was real gritty guy. I'm sure the fan base, he's a damn good dog, whatever they call Penn State. He's a damn good Lion. Mm-hmm. He's a tough guy, but it's like he seemed like he had a real ceiling on what his ability was.
Yeah, and look, that's okay. But I mean, Aller, he could. That's a difference maker. Like, does he get them where? Look, they were 82nd, Matt Green, in third down conversions in the country last year. That's got to get cleaned up. You can't be near the bottom in FBS and third down conversion rate. Like, that's not a recipe for making it into the college football playoff and ending that drought. But the defense is really good, and I think that's another underrated part of what James Franklin's built there, is the offense is solid, putting dudes in the NFL, but like, they were third in yards per attempt last year in the Big Ten. Like you said, you get Michigan at home, that's their season right there. At Ohio State, like, not as big if you can beat Michigan at home, and then you get a neutral site against Michigan State now. So I think there is a realistic path, and I agree with you, if not this year, when is it? For the Nittany Lions, and I think it's fair to say, hey, if you're a Penn State fan, you should expect, like, we're in the college football playoff conversation, especially based on how last year went. Like, all right, that was it. What, they finished 10-2 in the regular season, unless I'm misremembering it?
Yeah,
10-2. You should be better this year. You should be 11-1. You should break through.
What do you think about this comparison? I feel like James Franklin is more like Kirby Smart, whereas Steve Sarkisian is like Ryan Day. So like, Ryan Day and Kirby Smart are both under a bunch of pressure prior to like winning. Ryan Day still hasn't won a national championship. But with Ryan Day, it's like, we're not sure we're better today than we were the day you took over, you know? And just with, you look at Texas and Sarkisian, it feels a little better, but you're not actually sure that it's even better than it was when he got there. Like, they're getting some big time recruits now, like, sure, but the win-loss total hasn't even improved. Whereas with James Franklin, it's more like a Kirby Smart. Like, from the exterior, it was Georgia's got to win a national championship, or if they don't do it now, when are they ever going to do it? But within Georgia circles, everyone's like, okay, things are as great as they've ever been. Eventually, this guy's got to get us a championship. That's kind of how it feels to me from Penn State. Is it's like there's pressure from the outside, but Penn State people know, like, oh man, those years before James Franklin, it was so much worse. Like, we're at least, like, our disappointing years were finishing ranked, you know? Like, so I think there's some external pressure on James Franklin, but I don't know if it's like his seat gets any hotter if they don't make the Big Ten championship this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I would agree. But I am curious, like, Franklin, like, does he get more interest from somewhere else this offseason? He's always rumored for, like, a lot of bigger time jobs, but he's got to get in Happy Valley. And I know he's from Pennsylvania, so maybe he's good there for the long term. And I'm not sure Penn State can do better than James Franklin, which is another point there. So,
yeah,
we'll see. The last one here, Tennessee. Have you heard of them?
Who?
Have you heard of the Vols?
No. Is this a women's basketball? What are we talking about?
Hey, a lot of success there, too. Tennessee, though, has not made the college football playoff yet. They go into this year. New quarterback. They were obviously number one in the country for a little bit last year. They had the spot kind of sealed up if they take care of business against South Carolina on the road. And obviously that did not go the way any Tennessee fan had hoped. I'm curious to see if those orange helmets ever make their way back into the Tennessee locker room. My gut tells me we won't see those bad boys around for a long time. But the case for Tennessee making it this year, I think I would still bet against it. I still think in my heart of hearts they take a step back. I'm not saying a big step back. I think this feels more like a 9-3, 8-4 team to me with progress on defense. Like, we're going to see what happens with Joshua Josephs, James Pierce on the edge. Roman Harrison is still probably going to start at that Leo spot. They need a big year from Tyler Barron on the opposite side. Lot of infusion of talent on the defensive line all across the board. Those guys have to pop. Like, you have to have the Tyree West, those guys. Norman Lott, from the transfer from Arizona State. You need Amari Thomas to have another big year as the leader of this defensive line. They need to have big years. They need to burst through. Some of these four-star kids need to start breaking through hot. And then some of the five-stars, like the David Hobbs and company, who are into the fold, they need to start rotating. Arian Carter, 2-deep linebacker, four-star linebacker, freshman from Tennessee. He's got to play. Aaron Beasley, Keenan Peely, linebacker transfer from BYU. He's got to be really good out of the gate.
Did you say Keenan Peely?
Nah, Keenan Peely, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. Old dude, already married, I think, on campus, so he's an old soul. But by all accounts, good leader and probably a tackling machine if he's healthy. Then you look at the secondary. Can't possibly be any worse than what they were a year ago. So, look, that can't be as bad as it was if you want to make the college football playoff this year. I'm really built off that. Jordan Matthews entered the fold. Gabe Judy-Lawley also enters the fold. Another BYU kid. I'm interested to see if he starts. Kamal Haddon, it looks like, is a starter out of spring practice. So we'll see if he carries that into it. The secondary's got to get better, though. I'm not feeling great about the safeties. Jalen McCullough and Wesley Walker and Terry McDonald. Not a lot of upside there. Okay, but not a lot of upside there. Exposable. Danico Slaughter, where does he fit? Is he a safety? Is he a corner? All that to say, I think the defense takes a step forward, and I think they're better in 2023. I don't think the offense is better than what the best of it was last year. I'm still, like, there's still, like, a floor for Josh Heupel's offense, I think, in the sport. I mean, like, it wasn't easy. People forget, kind of like with Stetson in 2021 and Georgia's offense, where it's, like, it was pretty off kilter, and it wasn't smooth in 2021 until really the end of the season, where Tennessee really started figuring stuff out with Heupel and what they were trying to do. Like, it was rough. I was in the building for a lot of those early weeks with Joe Milton, and then the early part of Hendon Hooker taking over. I'm curious to see, because Joe Milton obviously did not throw a pick. He has all this upside. He is going to be a fan favorite. National media is going to love this story. He can throw the ball 85 yards. He did it again this week. Standing backflips, all that stuff. They have talent at wide receiver. They should be fine there. I don't see this offense falling out of the top 10 in scoring. However, I don't trust Joe Milton in Tuscaloosa. I don't trust this offensive line in Tuscaloosa. I don't trust this offensive line against Georgia at home. I don't know if I trust this line at Kentucky and what Kentucky's going to look like this year. Like, they're going to kill Virginia in the opener. They're going to take care of the games they're supposed to. But, like, what does that offensive line look like against A&M at home? A&M's going to have dudes on the defensive line coming into Neyland. Like, what if John Campbell, the transfer left tackle, can't hold up? What if the right tackle spot is just a disaster with Gerald Mincy and J.J. Crawford? Left guard's still very much up in the air. Like, is it Ollie Lane? I don't know. I think the offensive line is going to be worse. Losing Darnell Wright is going to really hurt this team, I think, this year. And the thing about Hendon Hooker, too, not only was he just an unbelievable leader, person, player, all that, he moved around in the pocket. He knew when to take off and go get the first down when the first read wasn't there, things broke down. He took care of business. Joe Milton in the bowl game, if you go back, a lot of three and outs, took a lot of bad sacks. So he had the big plays to squirrel down the field, but it wasn't clean. It wasn't always just humming like it was with Hendon Hooker all year long. I am very concerned with this offense and what Joe Milton looks like if the offensive line takes a big step back. He takes the bad sacks. He is reluctant to take off. He's more of a statue guy. I don't think that's a recipe for a college football playoff year. So I don't think they're going to end the drought this year. Now in 2024, 12-team playoff, Nico with a full year red shirt, a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. They'll be right there in the blue chip ratio. I could see it. Like, you could easily talk me into them being a playoff team next year. This year?
Well, 12-team, the whole meaning of a playoff team kind of changes.
I still think it's not going to be a cakewalk for an SEC, like, SEC to get three teams in.
Of course, but a playoff contender, when you're saying, I think they could finish top 12 or finish top four, this is completely different at that point.
That's fair. I would just say that, like, even top four next year would not surprise me. Like, if Nico is as good as he possibly can be, and with the talent they have now, both sides the ball and how they've recruited, I could see them being a top four team, even a preseason top four team going into 2024. I don't see it this year. And that's me. If it is the case, that means the offensive line was fine. And that means the defense took a significant step forward. And that means Joe Milton is going top five in the NFL draft. All those things have to happen for Tennessee to win that playoff draft. Joe Milton has to have a Joe Burrow like breakout year, this 1 year blip where he finally puts it all together, impossible to sack, takes off way more, is so much more trustworthy in big games, in close games, which we haven't seen yet, not running out of bounds on fourth down with the game on the line against a big team like Ole Miss at home. Can't do that against A&M at home on primetime, let's hope. Like, I just need to see it. And maybe that happens. Joe Milton has the talent for that to happen, but that's just not where I'm at. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it this year. And I'm not here to be to rain on the Tennessee volunteer parade. But have Tennessee fans considered the possibility that the number one ranking in November of 2022 is as good as it ever gets? Like, you look at Dan Mullen, you look at Mississippi State, like 2014, like we love to talk about like what they did in 2014. It's like, what did Mississippi State ever do after that? It's like they had some 9-4 seasons. Like, they had some years where they were good, finished ranked. Like, South Florida, they were ranked like number two that 1 year. Like, nothing ever amounted to anything for South Florida. They ended up, 8-5 next year, or whatever they were. It's like, so there's like this notion that it's just that progress is like linear, It's like, oh, they went, what did they go, 7-6 in 2021, followed up with 11-2 is that what Tennessee did last year? That it's like, oh, now they're going to be in the playoff. And it's like, hold on now. The stars may have aligned for the 11-2, and Tennessee, I think, does take a step back. Like, I think the schedule plays out pretty solid for them. Like, other than at Florida early, it's like, that's in terms of having to go into a hostile environment early in the year. Like, other than the fact that Tennessee like never wins at Florida in the last 15 years, like, just that's extra, that's extra stuff that we talk about as college football fans, but that doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter that what Florida was doing in 2013 and 2015 and 2009 when they were playing Florida, that doesn't really affect this, or when they were playing Tennessee, that doesn't affect this game. But psychologically, Tennessee fans feel it, and they feel an extra pressure when playing in the Swamp. But if they can get over that, I feel like that just buys them, that just gives them so much confidence, I think, kind of getting that Swamp win off their back. So they're, if they beat Florida, they're going to start 4-0. And then obviously having A&M and Alabama right there back-to-back is just super tough. But if you can get through that, all of that with like one or two losses, like, and then you're set up the 11th game of the season, most likely with Georgia, and like to actually have a chance to like a win over Georgia could win the East. Like, that's really all you want as a Tennessee fan, is for that December or November 18th game to Georgia, against Georgia, to be for the SEC East. Like, if that's what the season happens in the season, it's basically a success.
I would agree. I think you're right about Florida. I think that will tell me everything I need to know about where this season's going. Like, Florida, you have to get over it. Like, it's one thing to win at home, but it's another thing to go into the Swamp where they haven't won in forever. And South Carolina at home, I think they'll be fine. A&M at home, I still think they'll be fine. I just, on the road at Florida, on the road at Bama, you're asking a lot to beat Bama back-to-back years, beat Saban back-to-back years. And yeah, then if you don't beat Saban at Alabama, then you have to beat Georgia at home
with Hendon Hooker back and like no question marks on the offense. It's tough to navigate this schedule and like going at and beating Saban back to back with the added variable of like Joe Milton could be great and he could be awful. Like, it's like we really don't even know what the ceiling or the floor is for Joe Milton at this point. So it could be Nico, like it could be a disastrous year where you lose 4 or 5 games. But it could also be a year where you're playing for the SEC championship. So I think Tennessee's got a lot of variables. But I mean, I look at what Georgia is probably going to be, and that's going to be a tough one to get over. So if you got two losses going into that game versus Georgia, and Georgia's undefeated, and it's like
you're not
that,
a playoff team,
that result doesn't really matter. It's like that'll be a little discouraging as a Tennessee fan. But if you go 9-3. You know, 10-3 if you win a bowl game. If that's the disappointing year in year three of Heupel, then you know you'll take that and move to year four.
The most Tennessee thing ever would be to lose to Florida, lose to Bama, and then beat Georgia, and none of it mattering. Like, to get over the Georgia hump and just have the upset of the century, and then it doesn't matter because of the two early losses, and you're not a playoff team.
Yeah, absolutely. To have that game actually mean something in Knoxville, like, that crowd is going to be absolutely insane. So I'm hoping, and Georgia's not a guarantee to be, you know, undefeated at 10-0 either. So it's like Georgia could have a loss on their schedule. We don't know where the loss is going to come. It feels like Tennessee is probably the most likely if you had to pick one on the schedule. But, you know, college football is a tricky sport, so you still got to play the games, and you know, you never know.
I would say Auburn is more likely. If I had to pick one of like most, just at Auburn, I could see just the game from hell, the A&M Bama type game from 2 years ago. Like, it would, like something like that, where Auburn will, like, they've put in a bunch of work in the portal. Like, they are going to have a bunch of talent everywhere, and if Peyton Thorne's good, I mean, that game's always it. Always has the potential in Jordan Hare to get a little frisky for the Dogs. Like, I love Tennessee. I hope that they are right there with the Dogs come late November. But like, I don't know who's going to be under center by that point. I don't know what Tennessee looks like at that point. Auburn early on, Georgia could overlook them based on what happened last year. Hugh Freeze obviously has a lot of success. Wasn't Kirby the DC at Alabama when he beat them with Ole Miss?
Yeah, that would have been 14 and 15, I think they beat him back-to-back, right? Yeah, that would have been Kirby at Alabama.
It wouldn't shock me. Like, I don't think they're going to do it, but like, if I had to say between the two, who I would say is more likely, especially based on the time they're playing, I'm like, I can see it more. I think Auburn to me feels more frisky than.
That's fair. You might Tennessee might be a lot more established by game 11, but there's also a chance that Georgia is a lot more established by game 11 as well. So yeah, and if you just go about by Hugh Freeze versus Josh Heupel, like Kirby Smart's had significantly more success versus Heupel versus as opposed to Freeze.
Yeah,
and even year one of a Kirby. Granted, that's year one, and they lost to Vanderbilt that year. But the Chad Kelly and that Ole Miss team put a huge number on Georgia. I think that was like 28-0 in like the first half.
That's what. So there you go. That's what
it was. That was 2016 Georgia, and that defense has come a long way since then.
There you go. Well, that's all I've got, Matt Green. Anything you want to add as we wrap up here? Who is your final pick here as most likely of this group to make it? Penn State?
I would have to go Penn State. I think this could be the year, but I think it was shocking to me. We didn't even get into USC, which I had USC probably at the top of my list because I think with what Lincoln Riley's done, like none of those Oklahoma teams could play defense either, and he managed to make the playoff a couple times. So I don't know. I wouldn't rule them out because we know the way they've been accumulating talent. So USC is definitely, especially if you're just going by this year, like talking big picture, like A&M could be there, Tennessee could be there, but like I don't know about it in 2023. I think Penn State and USC, they could both potentially get that done this year.
Okay.
But hey, like I said before, everyone's always counting out the Utes. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they end up winning the Pac-12 again.
No, that's what they want. They want you to count out the Utes. That's what they want, Matt Green.
Last thing I didn't even say, 94 days till college football season, sir. So, I didn't have a number 94. You got one off the top of your head? Quentin Moses is the first Georgia one I think of off the top of my head.
Butler. Just got drafted by the Saints a couple years ago. The leader of the defensive line for Tennessee.
Ah, fair enough.
See, yeah. Now I'm like double-checking. Yeah, Matthew Butler was 94. I just want to make sure. It's the first one that came to mind. There you go. Matt Green.
94 days.
94 days. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, I am Chase Thomas. And that will do it for this edition of the Full Ride here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. And we will talk to y'all next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.